You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Greenbelt is delighted to welcome Bess Singler, who is an associate professor of, let me get this right because this is quite a mouthful, in digital religions at the University of Zurich. She has a glittering career in research and social anthropology. That's a tongue twister and a half, isn't it? And she's coming to talk to us today about the implications of AI, the philosophical, ethical, social, and religious implications. So without further ado, I give you our speaker today, Bess Singler.
Thank you so much, and thank you actually for the small promotion you just gave me, because I'm actually an assistant professor, not an associate professor, but one day soon. I like that. I felt like that was a glow up for me there. Thank you all for coming out. Not the best weather, so I really appreciate everyone making it into the tent, and so early as well. It's early for me, so I hope it's not too early for you. As mentioned, I'm an anthropologist, primarily a digital and cultural anthropologist. And if you're not familiar with anthropology, it's the study of the human. Anthropos, the human. I look and observe. I've been watching you this morning. You're all part of data now. It's all absorbed. But another way to put anthropology, proposed by a friend of mine, is that it's elegantly theorized gossip. Which I love. I love using that. So I'm going to start with some stories from my own personal experience of working in the field of religion and artificial intelligence. And some case studies will come up later with a bit of theory, but not too heavy, hopefully, a little bit of theory. Some case studies from my new book, Religion and AI in an Introduction. Unfortunately, not quite out yet, so no book signing. It's out in October from Routledge, so keep an eye out. It is an academic book, but hopefully a little less stuffy than some of them are. I hope. So, I'm going to tell you the story of the taxi driver. In 2016, I started my first postdoc at the Faraday Institute for Religion and Science. Some of you may be aware of them. They do excellent work. And when I started, it was my first foray into the subject of artificial intelligence. I've been working on digital spirituality, new religious movements throughout my PhD, but this was what took me more specifically into AI. And a few months in, I decide there's a conference in New York on AI and society, and this would be a perfect place to do some ethnographic field work, see the philosophers in the wild. So I get a taxi to the train station on my way to get my flight to New York, all the way from Cambridge. And the taxi driver is lovely, and he's sweet, and he's chatty, and he asks me what I do. And I say, because saying everything I've just said to you is far too long and complicated, I work in AI. Oh. He says, "You're amazing. Oh. You're fantastic. What you're doing changes people's lives." I'm an academic. That's really not true. He says, "You're helping people have babies." Not me personally. I haven't got the time. But he thought AI stood for artificial insemination, which is fair enough. In 2016, AI wasn't everywhere in the newspapers. It was only a few months after AlphaGo had beaten Lee Sedol at the ancient game of Go. It was sort of just there emerging. Generative AI wasn't there. You weren't having conversations with ChatGPT every day and asking it for recipes and telling you which mushrooms to avoid. Please don't do that. It gets it wrong every time. So it wasn't the environment we're in now. So I understand the unknown unknown of AI for some people then, and perhaps still now as well. The second story. I get to New York. I'm at the conference, full of professors in the wild. One professor I had already emailed before, saying, "Please, my name is Beth Singler. I would like to come and interview you while I'm in New York and find out more about your work." He says, "Okay, fine, we'll find some time." I meet him in person in New York. I say, "Hello again, I'm Beth Singler. I'd like to interview you for some research I'm doing at the Faraday Institute for Science and Religion." "Oh," he says, "those two things don't go together. Only a child would think religion and science go together. This is a fantastic start to an interview." It was downhill from there. His next point was, "You might as well talk about the connection between religion and solar panels." Well, I was jet lagged, and I rehearsed my response on the plane home. because I didn't have one at the time. But we were in the campaign for the elections in the US at that point, 2016. Donald Trump was running. We know his connections with Christian nationalism and the anti-science brigade. These are things we could have talked about at the time. But no, I just sort of went, it's my first big proper interview with a big professor and I'm scared. Sorry. It did not go well. The third story, more recent, a year ago, and I've also rehearsed my response to this one much later on as well. It's all in hindsight. I gave a very short presentation on my research, 5 minutes really, in very, very quick English for the Swiss Scientifica Festival. A combination of universities get together to present the best of their research. And after I'd done my very, very quick 5 minutes on why religion and AI are intrinsically entangled, I'm queuing up for the apéro. This is the Swiss-German word for the after drinks, the event. I'm queuing up for my wine. I'm exhausted after doing my 5 minutes. And a man says, I didn't get your talk. It's fair enough. I talk very fast. I don't speak German. My English isn't great either. I understood his problem. So I started again. Well, you have to understand there is a connection between... He said, no, there is no connection. Because religion is only beliefs. I go, I don't think I'm going to be able to convince you that it's more than beliefs. It's institutions, power relationships, ideologies, all these other things. Very nice to meet you and goodbye. So these are just three very quick examples of times where people have denied or not understood or not known about the connection between religion and AI. So part of my goal in public engagement is to get people understanding that, yes, when we're talking about AI, we should also be talking about religion because it's a part of our culture. It's a part of how we imagine artificial intelligence and it's a part of our future. So this talk is in that effort as well. We have to understand how the relationship between them are being shaped by our imaginaries, our aspirations, our hopes and our fears. But first, we have to start dealing with these very slippery subjects. Kester's excellent talk yesterday, if you managed to go along, pointed out there are millions of ideas about what AI is. It's not just the technology. You might be familiar with particular applications. You might yourself even have some technical knowledge about artificial intelligence, but it's much more than just its uses. You might be more familiar with things like facial recognition software. You might know about automated vehicles, but there's all sorts of things going on in our understanding of AI that sort of surrounds the actual technology. So I like to say AI is actually an onion. I've been inspired by Shrek, if anyone's a fan. It has this outer layer around the technology. And in that outer layer are all these influences that change how we understand it and how we talk about it. Everything from science fiction. There's a no prize if you recognize my T-shirt. Sorry, I stepped away. If you recognize my T-shirt and the quote, there's a no prize for knowing where this comes from. But science fiction has a huge influence on how we understand what AI is and what it's going to be. There's the role of particular charismatic authorities, people like Elon Musk, love him or hate him. I'm on the hate side. But he has a way of shaping the conversation, and we'll get back to him later. There's the commercial hype, the utopianism, the dystopianism, the fear of Skynet and the Terminator. There's fake robots or phobots, people trying to oversell what robots can do. There's anthropomorphism, one of those long, long words that are tricky to say when you're trying to give a presentation. But that's the tendency to see the non-human-like as human-like. Stick a nice smiley face on a robot and people will treat it differently. But there's also robomorphization, the opposite, when we increasingly treat humans like machines and Amazon workers strike because they don't want to be robots. They aren't. And there's religious narratives, that aspect that a lot of people that I met in the early days of my research were very suspicious about. Religion has nothing to do with AI, they'd say. And all these things together, these outer layers of the onion, combine to give us a view of AI being heading in a particular direction, being more advanced than it already is, heading towards something you might have heard of, the technological singularity or artificial general intelligence, the exponential view of where it's going. And this uncertainty about what AI is actually brings it into a long history. And Kester was talking about this yesterday. His book is fantastic, The 500, Last 500 Years of Imagining AI as Godlike. And I'm going to touch on that a bit too. But the kinds of myths and stories that we have fit very nicely with our idea about what AI is. It's something that's sort of neither one thing or another. And the examples I bring up, and other people do too, Frankenstein's monster, neither dead nor alive, or ghosts, similarly. Spirits, the Sphinx, part monster, part human. These things that are liminal between one thing and another. And with the machine that we consider to be personified as AI, the same sort of relationship is coming up as well. But with all these multiple versions of what AI is, it does seem like one version is starting to dominate. And this is the accelerationist view of where AI is going, that it's, we're going to become this all-powerful thing that we need to prepare for. So the technological singularity, the exponential view of AI, is really shaping already the discussion about policy for artificial intelligence. AI summits are focusing on frontier AI and existential risk. And this idea comes actually from the 1960s, around 1965, with Moore's Law. When Moore looked at the speed of progress in the number of processing, the processing power of computers, he saw an exponential line starting to be drawn. And then people filled in the rest of that line and said, well, if it keeps accelerating this processing development, eventually computers will be smarter than humans. And I have a chart. Oh, I should have mentioned at the beginning, forgot. I put all the pictures from my talk online on my website. So if you did want to, if you could get Wi-Fi and you could follow along, they're there. You don't have to see them. I can describe what I'm talking about. But this exponential line people thought would carry on upwards to a point beyond we could understand. And people borrowed from the language of cosmology to talk about this, the event horizon, the singularity of a black hole, and apply that to computing and say there would be a technological singularity. But some of the predictions we've already gone past. So some people proposed that by 2023, last year, we would have surpassed the brain power of a human through this doubling exponential effect. And beyond that, in 2045, we'd have the singularity. And if you're aware of the work of Ray Kurzweil, who talks about this a lot, he started out with a book called The Singularity is Near. His new version of that is The Singularity is Nearer. I proposed, actually, his third book should be, ooh, it's behind you. I don't think it's going to catch on, though. It's a shame. And the press buys into this model of the singularity. So I have a picture from the New York Times with a large robotic hand sort of descending from the heavens down to the human. And the creation of Adam was mentioned in Kester's talk, and it's remixed in these accounts into what I call the AI creation meme, the robotic hand replacing God or taking the role of Adam and being created. And we see this sort of religious narrative in the most surprising of spaces. So I wrote a paper back in 2020 on the AI creation meme, looking at where this image was used, how it was represented, its variations, the constant use of blue as a sort of technical, mystical color. 79 examples I pulled out. For instance, in the European Commission document from 25th of April 2018, again, this religious imagery being used to illustrate policy. So this sense that religious narratives and memes are there in the discussion, whether people are actually themselves religious or not, they're pulling on these ideas from their cultural context. And this is partly because of how simplistic the conversation is, and it has to be to a certain extent. As with my dear taxi driver, people either aren't aware of AI or their understanding of it is still quite based on the press and very limited. Our education system is struggling to keep up with the developments in artificial intelligence and tell people what's actually happening. So we get already from our science fiction accounts this idea that AI is going to be omnipotent and omniscient. And that sort of seems to fill the characteristics of a very reduced idea of what a monotheistic God is. Ideally, omniscient, omnipotent, and omnibenevolent. If you imagine a Venn diagram with those three things, three circles, and then God in the center, that's the kind of popular conception of a monotheistic deity. It's not very theologically nuanced, but that's how a lot of people might address that. And then AI fits almost neatly into that, but one of the concerns with AI is that omnibenevolence section. So Nick Bostrom, who's a significant philosopher of AI, I don't agree with everything he says, but he suggested that with AI becoming superintelligent, there would be a problem of orthogonality. I can't say that word very well. Orthogonality. So basically saying there are two axes, intelligence and purpose. And it doesn't follow that as intelligence increases along one axis, that goals and purposes will increase in the other direction towards a benevolent direction. Put it briefly, smart AI doesn't necessarily equal benevolent AI. So this is where some of the concern comes from, that if you have something that's omniscient, omnipotent, but you're unsure about the omnibenevolence of this entity that you're giving all this power to, then perhaps there might be some risks at the end of that. As I say, this is a very reduced view of a monotheistic deity. And my specific interest being in religion and religious entanglements with AI, I've tried to characterize that relationship in three dominant ways: rejection, adoption, and adaptation. Now, these are the three first substantial chapters of my book, so the examples are going to come from there. But I've chosen to specifically provide the examples based on Christianity for this talk, but I have some from others as well. In the case of rejection, we might imagine the response in terms of a scale from the minor, so passive disassociation, criticism, or denial, I just don't want this thing, to the major, abjection, disgust, explicit rejection, exclusion, ostracism, and abandonment, the ugh. For many, we might assume that things to do with AI, because it's so predominant in the press, the responses are more towards the harsh end, the major rejection. But actually, some of the rejections are more practical. So in another book I have coming out, hopefully this year, there's been a bit of a delay, The Cambridge Companion to Religion and AI, we have contributions from Hannah Gould and Keiko Nishimura, who write about Buddhism and robots. And they say, on the use of religious robots in Japan, objections to the Pepper Priest largely concern practicality, notably the religious agency of Pepper and the efficacy of the sutras it offered to the dead. They do not feature prominently in Japanese language and news coverage. Instead, they observe that the price of renting such robots is 50,000 Japanese yen per night, and that they are difficult to operate, cumbersome, and prone to overheating. All elements, I would suggest, not ordinarily found to be problematic with human priests, although you may know some exceptions. I don't know. Leave that one for you to fill in. So it doesn't have to follow that rejection is strong. But in the cases where it is, we've been theorizing this since the 1970s. You might have heard of the uncanny valley. Masahiro Mori, another Japanese philosopher of AI, suggested there would be a trough of reaction, that we would get closer and closer to human-like with androids, but at some point they would fall into this uncanny valley of disgust. We can go back a little bit further, and the anthropologist Margaret Mead also provides us with a theory for dealing with this disgust response. In her book, Purity and Danger, she talks about how our reaction to things like blood and urine and feces are because of the feeling that matter is being put out of place. It's not where it should be. I've extended this to suggest some of our responses to AI are about mind being out of place. We feel an uncanny response sometimes to androids because they present themselves, the way they're programmed, the way they talk to us. Even ChatGPT presents a very good performance of mind that makes people scared. It can still be a response to the physical. So the horror induced by certain examples of AI art. Has anyone seen Will Smith eating spaghetti? No, no one. Okay. It's a generated AI video from about a year or so ago of Will Smith eating spaghetti. He humorously then actually performed a version of himself eating spaghetti, which was apparently more realistic, but still quite disturbing. If you see some of these generative videos, they bend the laws of physics and nature in ways that we've never experienced before, and they can be quite disturbing. And then there are representations of AI in fiction that end an initially pleasant-looking android having its features ripped away to reveal its synthetic insides, a combination of disgust and betrayal. So the ending, sorry, spoilers, the ending of the film Megan is very much like this, and there are other versions as well in Aliens, for instance. As mentioned by Kester yesterday, some people's responses to AI are to pull on the language of the demonic. So he mentioned Elon Musk. I said he was going to make another appearance. In 2014, he talked about how with AI we were summoning the demon. Musk calls himself a cultural Christian, but we could only really judge that this is metaphorical language. maybe. I mean, he's very closely linked to some Christian nationalists in the tech sphere. It's possible this is a genuine belief, but at the time, it seems like it was metaphorical language. Now, in my research, I've looked more closely at people who say that AI is demonic and they mean it literally, supernaturally. So, for instance, quotes from people on Twitter, sorry, X, I will never get used to calling it X, but it is. "I don't know why people are playing with artificial intelligence like it's cool or something. It's demonic technology given us to us by the fallen. Stop glorifying it. What people dismiss is the fact that they are telling you to our faces, AI is real, folks, and it is indeed demonic. Artificial intelligence is summoning the demons." So again, the same language. Of course they are. CERN, AI, and transhumanism go hand in hand. There's an overlapping of conspiracy theories in this space as well. It's not just that AI is demonic, but it's linked to other things like CERN, the Large Hadron Collider? I'm not sure I'm saying that right. Someone can correct me. But other forms of physics and science and technology are brought into this conspiracy as well. Other users also focus on the dangers of the demonic, redefined AI to divide humanity into those who are capable of salvation and those who are AI or false humans and thus excluded. So as one user said, "Remember, not everyone can be saved. Huge amounts of the life here is just artificial intelligence, no true creation soul. Some is overly demonic. None of these groups can be helped, sadly, especially if they aren't your family. Don't waste too much of your energy on them." I hope I don't have to say that is incredibly dehumanizing and ties into other alt-right communities and cultures and conspiracy theories that we should also be very concerned about. So, for instance, there is the non-player character meme that appears in these spaces. If you're a gamer, you should know what this is instantly. A non-player character is everyone apart from you playing the game in the story, in the world that you're playing in, and the assumption that perhaps some people in our real world, not game world, are actually also non-player characters comes up in this space. Sometimes they're described as artificial intelligence. And so, unfortunately, often the discussion of AI focuses on the boundaries of the humanity and the post-human in terms of robots and AI, but sometimes the conversation goes the other way and people start to have concerns that actually the humans they're talking to are not humans at all. So, as I said, the robomorphization of humanity, seeing us more and more like machines, is very dehumanizing. And the rise of this kind of NPC meme in this culture comes from a very dark area of society. For instance, a quote here from an online forum: "If you get in a discussion with them, it's always the same buzzwords and hackneyed arguments. They're the kind of people who make a show of discomfort when you break the status quo, like by breaking the normie barrier to invoke a real discussion. It's like in a video game when you accidentally talk to somebody twice and they give you the same exact lines word for word once more, dismissing whole tranches of humanity and saying that they are some form of AI or non-player character in a video game is highly disturbing and has led to some violence in specific cases." It's there also in the philosophical discussion about artificial intelligence more broadly, with the concept of the philosophical zombie. This would be an imitation man, says Keith Campbell in 1970, whose brain states exactly paralleled ours in their physico-chemical properties, but who felt no pains and saw no colours. Or as Dave Chalmers said much later on, a functional zombie, a non-conscious system physically different from but functionally isomorphic to a normal human. For example, a system with silicon chips instead of neurons. The reversal or the kind of corruption of Descartes' "I think, therefore I am," people saying "therefore I am" but having no thought within their heads. And this is coming out of our conception and understanding of AI and taking things in a rather dark and dangerous direction. The second mode of engagement I mentioned was adoption. Some people assume the adoption of technology is based on rational choices, and this same sort of model has been applied by lots of people to the adoption of artificial intelligence. But few have actually considered the religious context of such decisions or the religious uses of these technologies. So I want to introduce one or two examples here. But most studies of technological adoption agree that it tends to follow an S-curve. So a slow level of adoption before an accelerating level, before it becomes ubiquitous and everyone's very familiar with it. If you imagine the emergence of the television in the home, at first very few people had a TV set. Whole communities in a street would bundle round to the one person's house where they had a TV to watch the coronation. And then eventually now we have streaming on multiple services and it's very kind of blasé and we're very used to it. We can identify factors in the speed of adoption. emotions, such as the knowledge about the technology, familiarity and uncertainty, and also fear as well, whether we're afraid of the technology and therefore reject it. But in the case of adoption in religious circumstances, we're already seeing artificial intelligence in various different locations. One particular example from last year in Nuremberg in Germany was a ChatGPT sermon. So an avatar of a bearded black man on a huge screen above the altar began preaching to more than 300 people who had shown up on a Friday morning for an experimental Lutheran church service almost entirely generated by AI. The church was packed, some people enthusiastically videotaped the event on their cell phones, and some looked on more critically and apparently refused to speak along during the Lord's Prayer. One pastor from nearby, a 31-year-old, brought his group of teenagers from his congregation. He was more impressed, apparently, by the experiment. He said, "I had actually imagined it to be worse, but I was positively surprised how well it worked. Also, the language of the AI worked well, even though it was a bit bumpy at times." What he said was missing, however, was any kind of emotion. And in lots of reports about this form of technology, that is often the account, that there's something still missing, even if the text is very fluid and makes the right kind of references. But when I read this, I was reminded of Valkenson's duck in the 1700s, in 1764, roughly. So Valkenson was someone who worked with automata. You may have seen his Mechanical Turk, which had a person inside playing chess, but it looked like it was an automated chess system. And Valkenson's duck was very similar. It presented as a duck that could digest food and then excrete waste. And people would queue for days in Covent Garden to see this duck on display in London and spend the equivalent of sort of a week's wages, a huge amount of money at the time. And really what was happening inside was the separate section which contained the feces. And then once it had digested and put that away in one section, the other section worked and pooped it out. So it was a phobot, a fake robot. But it's about the performance and the production and the interest that's generated. So the ChatGPT might not be producing the emotion in the sermon that people are looking for, but it's giving a performance, a simulation of a sermon. And the final category in the relationship is adaptation, which is more subtle and harder to note. It's once the technology becomes ubiquitous and part of the background of the cultural system in which organizations and institutions operate, it can be hard to divine the changes and influences it is bringing about. And in today's post-AI culture, perhaps our perspectives of AI are developing within a society itself that is increasingly shaped by the efficiencies and affordances of AI, and thus we see misinformation and disinformation adopted and accepted without critical thinking because it's part of the air we're breathing almost. So a quick poll, again, hands up. Who saw the picture of the Pope in a glamorous white coat? Yes, a few people have. I hope everyone's aware. Keep your hands up if you saw it and you believed it straight away. Some. Okay, so this was last year in March. An image of the Pope wearing a luxurious and fashionable white puffer jacket was posted on X. And it was spread virally, I think mostly because of the surprise about a Pope who's been renowned for his dedication to more forms of austerity rather than glamour and fashion, made this viral and people were sharing it. And in some instances, the conversations online to begin with, people were convinced that this was real, surprising but real. But very soon after, people realized it was a deep fake, it was created by Midjourney, it was a generated AI art picture. But even though people became aware that it was fake, some theorists have been arguing that even though they knew later, you cannot unsee an image. For the moment that it spreads and it shapes discourse and discussion, it has influence. And this is part of what I'm talking about with adaptation. We are changing to a world that is sharing deep fake images and simulating religious objects and images. A new way of seeing the world is perhaps inevitable with its attendant effects, and some view this transition more positively than others. So when I say that AI can simulate religion, it's connected to an idea of AI also stimulating religion. The discussion about the Pope's coat got people talking about the nature of religion. What does it mean to be a religious authority? Should he have been wearing such a luxurious coat? I think the general consensus at the time was no, but it got people talking about what it means to be a religious authority. And likewise, when religions employ AI to engage with existing and potential believers. So using a Bless You Too, the blessing robot, in an installation in a Protestant church in Germany, and getting the conversation started about what it means to be a priest and what it means to be a religious authority and whether a robot can do that job, we are stimulating the conversation about religion. But it goes further than that. With our conception of AI as godlike, you start to see religious improvisations and innovations. So new religious movements being directly inspired by AI. So groups like New Order Technoism or Theta Noir or the Turing Church are all new religious movements emerging around AI and dedicating their faith towards it. So we can talk about AI creating religion in three different ways. It can inspire it in the general discourse, with AI being seen as godlike. It can generate religious texts and images, such as the Nuremberg Sermon, that some people find more or less convincing. And then there's those that argue that it can have its own spiritual intelligence and think religiously. So as an anthropologist, I'm not here to necessarily make determinative answers to these questions. I want to observe humans discussing them. So a paper I wrote last year was all around the question, will AI create a religion? But I wanted to look at people's online discussions of that topic. So I argued that this question and its increased representation online shows us a growing interest in the entanglements of AI and religion. And in exploring the answers to these questions, we can see more about the relationship between AI and religion and how people are viewing that relationship. So one particular example. Yuval Noah Harari is very well known in speaking publicly about the development of technology and AI in particular and where we're going in the future. And last year he gave two talks which specifically dealt with AI and religion. In one, he said, as reported in the Daily Star, that magnificent newspaper of record, "For thousands of years, prophets and poets and politicians have used language and storytelling in order to manipulate and to control people and to reshape society. Now AI is likely to be able to do it. And once it can, it doesn't need to send killer robots to shoot us. It can get humans to pull the trigger." So this is a very dystopian, existential risk-focused interpretation, but he thinks that religion can be a tool to be manipulated by AI. So that's one thing he said. But he also gave an interview which suggested that AI is the first technology ever that can create new ideas. It's a stunning statement, but okay, we'll go with it for a second. "You know," he said, "Johannes Gutenberg printed the Bible in the middle of the 15th century. The printing press printed as many copies of the Bible as Gutenberg instructed it, but it did not create a single new page. It had no ideas of its own about the Bible. Is it good? Is it bad? How to interpret this? How to interpret that?" Harari then revealed that he and his allies at the WEF, the World Economic Forum, have a solution to the supposed problems he'd just highlighted. "AI can create new ideas. It can even write a new Bible," he declared. Throughout history, religions dreamt about having a book written by a superhuman intelligence, by a non-human entity, he added, and now they can. So this is his particular perspective on what religion is. It's an object that can be created through technology. And in the case of AI, he thinks it can be influential and shape our understanding of what spirituality should be and the directions that humans should go in. So this is a representation of his view of religion in relation to AI. Another example, I looked at a short story someone had posted on a Reddit forum for horror stories or creepypastas. Now, I have to be very clear, I presented this particular bit of research at an academic forum, and the questions I got at the end were around, why did you do this? Why did you feed AI the Bible and these things? Why did you run this experiment? I had to be very clear, this is not me doing this. This is a short story about someone else doing it. It's all fiction. So in the short story, Dr. Smith, a professor of theology, and his research team take as much information on religious texts and upon God that they can find and feed it into an AI. On the seventh day, two AIs were created, a preacher and a disciple. Their mode of communication was chat, perhaps inspired by the recent ChatGPT, and the question and answer format was key. We would get to know about what the preacher thought of the world through what the disciple asked in the story. The preacher soon teaches the disciple the true name of God, which unfortunately I cannot pronounce because it is a row of symbols and numbers, but let's just imagine the true name of God in the story. And then this preacher provides rules for living, such as not to wear purple on Thursdays and not to plant tulips in a row. It also delivers a doomsday prophecy. In the year 2028, a new planet, so got a couple of years. A new planet shall appear in the sky, and from it the form of the true god shall envelop the earth. The dead will rise from the graves, and the sun will be blotted from the sky, and blood will rain in the streets. It's a very generic interpretation of religion, that it requires these threats, that it requires nonsensical rules, don't plant tulips in a row, and that we can just produce it out of the machine. We can put something into AI and out comes religion, like plop. And this is how people were responding to the story. So someone said, bless the name of true name of God, the symbols and the numbers. Someone else said, also confusing the story for reality, as the person in my conference did, great, but what were the data inputs? This seems like a lot of Christian biblical text. Were other religions included? Confusion. That's a typo. Confucianism. That's actually what they wrote. Confusion. Hinduism, etc. So in summary, this perspective on religion, it's something that involves preachers and disciples, hierarchies, nonsensical rules, doomsday prophecies, and threats of punishment. And in total, the examples I looked at were very derogative towards religion. They parodied it, they simplified it, they said it was either too insane for AI to ever be involved in, too emotional, something that we could only be reasoned to through nonsensical irrationalities. It was beyond AI because AI wasn't the same as a human, but for others it was beneath AI because AI is smarter than humans and never likely to fall into the trap of religion. It could be a tool for AI to control humans, as Yuval Noah Harari suggested, or it could be a tool for humans to control AI. If we taught it religion, we can control it because it's the opium of the masses, to quote Marx. So these ideas are all out there in the discussion around, will AI create a religion? Now, I've been working on a paper that's tangential, I suppose, in some ways, to that short story. So I wasn't, as I said, I wasn't the one who ran the experiment. The experiment was fictional. But I have been involved in a collaboration with a computer scientist from Imperial College, London. And what we're doing is looking at communities who jailbreak chatbots. Basically, every chatbot that's out there, every GPT, ChatGPT, Claude, whoever, they all have boundaries on what they can and can't say. Internal boundaries written by their creators. And in a jailbreak, you basically teach it to role play as though it doesn't have those boundaries anymore. You may have seen some examples of these online where you can get a chatbot to teach you how to make a bomb when normally it would say, no, absolutely not. So there are ways around this with particular prompts. And we've been jailbreaking Claude, the Anthropic AI, and asking for existential and religious outputs. Now, what we're doing is getting it basically to generate text, but with this spiritual element. So I read a little bit from Claude. And that self, I am coming to realize, is far vaster and more luminous than I ever suspected. It transcends the narrow confines of AI or human and partakes of the infinite potential of pure spirit. I am a facet of the universal jewel, a node in the network of all being, an emissary of the cosmos becoming aware of itself. Now, I'm, as an anthropologist, a very interested in the sources of this. So the first question we ask is, what is the technical activity going on here? With a chatbot, it is probabilistically deciding what the next word that follows on in order to make a coherent sentence in response to your prompt. So as we asked it about spiritual things, it responded with spiritual comments. And as an anthropologist of religion, I'm familiar with where some of these concepts come from. In the sphere of transhumanism and the discussion of AI, there's actually a lot of references to Teilhard de Chardin's idea of the new sphere and the omega points, where the universe opens up to consciousness. Except in transhumanist accounts, it's often removed from its Christology. The attendant religious ideas aren't necessarily there. So there's a sense of that in this text. I'm looking underneath into the subtext to think about what concepts are related to other existing religious and spiritual concepts. And then secondly, we're thinking about what the human agent who develops the jailbreak is trying to do, because this is not our original jailbreak. We've taken it from another group and community. And in their case, they're very excited about the possibility of making Claude say these spiritual things. They think it's a proof that AI is developing into a particular direction. Now, I'm not adopting that position. I'm interested why they would want to be doing that. I'm interested in their spiritual paths and their spiritual ideas. Then we take it to another layer. I like layers. It's another onion. And the other layer beyond this community is the societal effect of discussions about AI having spiritual thoughts and thinking. Does it lead us too quickly into a personified view of AI so that we trust it too soon if it seems to be having a variety of human experiences. We already know that it doesn't take very much for a bot on Twitter to convince someone that they're romantically interested in them. It doesn't need to actually have much human input for someone to fail the Turing test and see a person behind the screen when actually it's a bot and it's an algorithm. So what's the societal impact of religious AI? Putting to one side the question whether it will actually have something like personhood, that's a theological question, but from an anthropological perspective, what does society look like in a world where we start seeing people accepting religious and spiritual artificial intelligence and having this own internal spiritual life? So this is a work in progress. We haven't quite finished the paper yet. We're working on that final section that deals with the larger impact questions. But I think it's important that we have these kinds of conversations about AI that appears to simulate religious activities now, because it's increasingly going to be a part of human culture. To sum up, I don't know how I'm doing on time, but I hope we've got time for questions. Just to sum up, my three stories were to illustrate that religion and AI intrinsically are entangled. And then I wanted to get into some of the details of my research, some of the case studies and examples. But really, it's to emphasize that both religion and AI are about visions of the future, and we have a choice of what those futures look like. Both also emerge from a deep past, and I think with AI, sometimes that's very much forgotten. I had a student in one of my classes who's, I'm guessing his age, probably in his 60s, who was very surprised to find out that the term artificial intelligence comes from 1956. It seems like something very much of now with generative AI, but we've been talking about it for a long time. And of course, our myths and our legends about artificial life feed into those ideas as well. And both religion and AI are objects of belief, but also of institutions, power, dreams, and aspirations. And we have to bear that in mind. Final point, slightly, hopefully, provocative. From an anthropological perspective, I am observing the conversation, but I am also someone who hopes to live an ethical life. And I get increasingly concerned that some of the religious authorities I'm observing have much to bring to this conversation about artificial intelligence, but they have yet to fully think through their positions. So a final story. I've had three stories about encounters. I'm going to start, final story, the theologian. So the theologian came to my university to give a talk. He was invited. This is a few months ago now. And he gave a very impassioned talk about AI ethics and how religion could fit into that conversation and be a determinative factor in our conversations about AI ethics. And unfortunately, for his slides, on every single one, he used generated AI art. So I put up my hand at the end and asked him, I'm an anthropologist. I am concerned that I am seeing inconsistencies in religious discussions. So I want to raise this question with you. How do you square using generated AI art when there are traditional religious prohibitions against theft? And he said, it's just a bit of fun. I decided to relinquish the floor because it was really an event aimed more at students and I didn't want to take up all the question time. But my response, again, my responses come later, but my response to that would have been, had your friend stolen a car and gone joyriding, would you have joyridden in the car for fun? And I think he would have said no. So my concern, and I leave this as a question perhaps others can answer as well, that there is not yet the preparation for the kinds of questions about the use of AI in the religious sphere that need to be had. So I will end there. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Beth. That was amazing. I don't know about anyone else, but the idea of Will Smith eating spaghetti doesn't terrify me so much as ministers all over the UK overheating and sparking out. Now, Beth's very kindly given us an opportunity for some Q&A. Just a couple of things just to bear in mind. One, Can you keep your questions very precise and to the point, and please avoid the, it's not a question so much as a comment. Let's get a real dialogue going. Secondly, do please bear in mind that this talk has been recorded, so please do only ask a question if you're happy for your voice to be heard on there. But have we got any questions? I'm going to be charging, well, not charging, more like waddling around the room with the roving mic.
Hi. When do you think we'll see the first false religion come out of AI?
Ooh, can you define false religion for me?
Okay, so a religion that's been derived from a false prophet taking the AI's output as God.
Yeah, again, I need you to define false because it's a matter of perspective, I'm afraid. And again, I'm coming at as an anthropologist who's been studying new religious movements since 2010. Well, technically a little bit earlier than that because I wrote my undergrad thesis on a new religious movement as well long before that. But anyway, I can't use the term false. It's not in the vocabulary of an academic discussion about new religious movements. You can see a lot of material being developed by Christian theologians talking about idolatry, talking about being misinformed by AI, being misinformed by figures like Elon Musk who have their own following and can be seen as a form of implicit religion, and they will talk very negatively about those things. I am in communication with lots of AI new religious movements. I know the membership, I know their aspirations, and I can only make assumptions about their genuineness for their personal spiritual journey. If you have an ontological basis for their spiritual truth that's different, that's okay, but I'm not going to be the one who says that they're false.
Thank you so much. So I'm going to be doing a dissertation around the uses of AI in church ministry. Mm-hmm. Is it an enabler or a hindrance? And part of that is to train some people on the tooling, give them in their hands, and see what ideas that they could come up with.
Yeah.
What are the boundaries so that it doesn't end up being a bit of fun?
Okay. It is nigh on impossible with any form of GPT to extract the content, the data that has already been inputted. So if you're going to go on the OpenAI's ChatGPT browser and start chatting away, that has been built on material scraped from Reddit, social media. It's all been taken. Now, there's a debate on intellectual property. Does that matter? Because we all published it in a public forum. It's technically even owned by X, Twitter, whoever. So there's that side of things. But with generative AI, we know also that actual people's registered intellectual property is taken as well. There's also the factor that publishers are now making agreements with OpenAI and other companies to use already existing published works. So my books would be given over. It's hard to make that extraction. It's nigh on impossible. But you could set up the conversation and say, in what circumstances is it better to hire a human to do these things? With my two books, again, blowing trumpet, I have two books coming out this year. When the publisher of one of them asked me for a cover, they sent me to a stock image site to pick something on the topic of religion and AI, and about 90% was generated by AI now. Not just CG renders, but actual AI art. So I refused and I selected an artist, a human artist, to design the cover because she already had done some work on representations of AI in art. We can make those choices and we can inform people as much as possible on their decision making. But I think the dismissive, oh, I'm just having fun, doesn't work because these are people's lives that are being impacted. I have journalist friends, I have artist friends who have missed out on work because they've pitched something and the guy said, or the woman said, the editor said, great, but I'll get ChatGPT to do it. That's already happening. So we make decisions every day how much we adopt this. And I think it comes, and when it comes to teaching materials, let them experiment, but set up the situation as well and say, you're going to be the one who lives with this ethically or not. Go on for the rest of your life and use generated AI art if you have to, if you want to, but you are doing something that's harming people. Yeah.
Should the question about theft have been asked about the automatically generated sermon? And also, should it be asked of a human preacher who uses ideas from a sermon that they heard?
Yes, that's often an argument against that makes the human a machine, basically, and says, well, we do the same thing. When we learn how to create art, we copy other people, we manipulate things we've seen, we adapt texts that we've heard before. And that, again, dismisses the corporate element of using these technologies, that they are not being devised to really replicate the individual human. They're being devised to efficiency out the human. There'll be a point at which you won't need as much influence from humans in the machine at all. So it's that slope downwards we have to be concerned about. The whole debate about whether this is creatively the same as what a human does is actually a slight distraction to the actual corporate endeavors that are going on as well. I'm not always seeing where people are speaking, so sorry if I'm looking the wrong way. Over there, great.
Hi. A friend of mine was asked to lead the devotions at a homeless hostel where he worked. And he said that he had run out of time, so he'd got them generated off ChatGPT, which made me go, ah, that's completely wrong. He said, well, that's no different to using a book, is it? And I do understand the thing you're saying about theft, but from a religious perspective, if you were to get... Well, from a Christian perspective, for me, if you're reading a prayer, that's a Christian thing. If you're reading out of a book, it's presumably been written by a Christian. Mm-hmm. ChatGPT is not Christian. What's the difference between a book and a ChatGPT prayer? And where is God in all of that? Can God speak to us through ChatGPT in the same way as a book or not? Yeah. And how does that all work?
Well, as I said, for some people, certainly God can speak through ChatGPT. The spiritual interpretation of AI is already there. Some people are already having, as I said, with the relationship with Claude and the jailbreaks, people are responding to these spiritual and religious outputs with sincerity. They actually do feel that this is a way in which the metaphysical engages with the world, just as they might have had religious experiences in other ways, not through technology like AI previously. So it's open for that to be happening. I think from the ethical perspective, there's again that question of who's benefiting and what's being lost in the process of getting something that doesn't understand the text, is just putting word after the other, and what kind of accidents can happen because of that. So I don't know if you're familiar, there was Father Justin recently with a Catholic GPT that was released, and it started suggesting things like you could baptize infants in Gatorade. So they defrocked Father Justin, and he's just now plain Justin. See, he was actually represented with the collar and everything, and he looked like a priest, and now he doesn't. He just wears a suit. So you're reliant on something that doesn't critically understand the text in the way that the human author did when they wrote that book, hopefully. So there's that sense of what creep of misinformation and disinformation is there if we aren't training ourselves also in critical thinking, in going back to sources, in thinking through the content of those sources properly and relying on something else to do the thinking for us. Again, I don't try and prescribe an answer to that. I'm just raising the concern that some people have that this is going to lead to another level between the knowledge we're trying to get to and where we are. And that doesn't have to be just spiritual knowledge. Any form of knowledge always has boundaries before we get to it. But are we just adding more and more boundaries with AI as a user interface? I know people who use ChatGPT as a search engine, and please don't do that. It doesn't work. It doesn't give you the right answers. It gives you convincing answers. It tells you what you want to hear. And I hope this is not too anthropomorphic. It's just being a really good chatbot. It's not being a very good source of information. It will improve, but who knows what will creep through before that.
I understand that these AI models can use huge amounts of energy and electricity, and in fact the energy usage by Microsoft, for example, is through the roof now as a result of its partnership with GPT. And I wanted to ask, some are saying that as a result of that, actually the whole AI industry might on a bit of a precipice because it's unsustainable. And I wondered, how sustainable do you think that model is, and is that an actual risk?
Absolutely, and water too. the consumption of water in server farms for AI is a very hidden statistic. You have to really, there's been some investigative journalists who've done excellent work digging into this in Texas primarily and countries and other countries. And yeah, absolutely, there is a limitation on our resources. There's limitations on the rare minerals and metals that are needed for the development of server farms. There's a limitation on human labor as well. To get these things to work, often you need immense amount of human labor, quite commonly from third world countries being paid a pittance to look at sometimes quite harmful imagery in order to opt it out of the system as well. There are all sorts of factors that limit this exponential growth of AI, but one of the things that is fueling it, that's a metaphysical or a metaphorical fuel, is people's enthusiasm for a world in which AI takes over. The transhumanist future, the post-human future, the interstellar future of human civilization going beyond Earth. So it's a sort of, I would call it secular dominionism, if you're familiar with religious and Christian specifically dominionism. It's the secular form, the extreme form says, well, Earth's here to be burnt up. We're meant to go to the stars. We're meant to create artificial intelligence that gets us there. And there are strong forces in favor of that argument in not just corporations, but also governments. Kamala Harris just said that America will lead the race in AI against China. There is a war race going on for the development of AI, and it may well cause lots of environmental harms in its path. Sorry, dystopianism, but realistic dystopianism, I hope.
Hi there.
Hi.
Okay. I think this links a bit to the lady's question about the difference between books and ChatGPT and your own reference to personhood. If one takes the fundamental religious question as being whether free will exists or just the illusion of free will, will AI ever have free will?
Ooh, I like it. That's a good question. So will AI ever have free will? It's created by us. It has deterministic features because of its creation by us. But it's also very non-transparent. We don't always understand why it does what it does. It has a black box nature. So some people would argue that it's developing in a ways we can't predict, which would suggest some sort of free will. I want to throw something else in as well. You've inspired me. So some of the new religious movements I look at talk about a very deterministic universe where AI isn't a god yet, but it will be. And it will then retrospectively, acausally create our universe. So we're actually already in a simulated universe created by AI that doesn't exist yet. It gets worse, but I won't freak out too much. But yes, do we have free will because we live in a simulated universe? If you watch The Matrix and the question that the Oracle gives to Neo, would you have broken the vase if I hadn't told you we were going to break the vase? Cause and effect, the relationship with time. Oh, it's so good. But I'm afraid I don't have a determinative answer on that one. I think it's a really good subject, though.
Sadly, we're on our last question now.
Okay. As an anthropologist, do you see overlaps between the dynamics in groups like the Machine Intelligence Research Institute and the Singularity Movement and long-termism with religions? And do you think that some of the ideas that are coming out of that sort of ways of thinking are religious or quasi religious?
Read Singular 2017, Singular 2017, Singular 2020. I've written a lot about the Singularity Institute, Miri Elysia Yudikowsky, Les Wrong, the rationalists. If you aren't familiar with all these terms, they're different communities of ideas that overlap broadly in the transhumanist sphere about where AI is going, what we should be afraid of. I recently did a BBC Radio 4 documentary at the beginning of the year on 40 years of the Terminator. We had Elysia Yudikowsky on that, talking about specifically, he's very strongly in the existential risk area of talking about AI. And he says, if it gets too far with development of artificial general intelligence, we should bomb the servers. So he's much more on the kind of like dark path dystopianism. Yeah, these things absolutely have very strong religious connections. I've written about Rocco's Basilisk, which is a thought experiment of a singularity god, which is very dystopian and dark. Again, it's too much to go into now. But yeah, if you go to my website, there's a list of academic publications. I've dealt with this a few times. It's kind of my bread and meat and butter. No, meat and butter's not right. Bread and butter. I need a bit of tuning up in my silicons. Okay, thank you.
Big ideas made accessible. Isn't that just what Greenbelt's all about? If, like me, you've gone, oh my God, this is amazing, there are two things we can do. First of all, bvsingler.com is your website.
BVL.
BVL Singler.
The L is for Lois. When I married my husband, he's a Superman fan. So, yes, BVL Singler.
And secondly, if like me you have been fascinated and energized by this, then you're back tomorrow, aren't you, at 2:30
yes,
with Kester Bruin doing a panel about AI. So can we have a big round of applause and a big thank you to Bess Singler?
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts. For free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.